A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
I'm Emily Elizabeth, and I'm the host of the What Fulfills You podcast, a show for and about individuals always seeking to be their best selves. On this show, we talk all about building the mindset, finding the right careers, creating meaningful relationships, and so much more. Welcome to the What Fulfills You podcast.
Hello, hello everyone. Happy Wednesday and welcome back to another episode of What Fulfills You. My name is Emily Elizabeth. I'm your host. And for today's very special episode, which happens to be episode 300, can't believe this is actually the 300th episode and that there have been many episodes that have been released on the show. But for this one, I decided I would make it more personal and dive into a Q&A. And some of these questions were actually, I should say, all of these questions are submitted by some frequent podcast listeners. And interestingly, when I asked some of you to share some questions you have or you would love for me to dive into, to no surprise, there was a lot, and I mean a lot of overlap in the questions you have. And when I am crafting an episode or crafting what I'm going to talk about on this podcast, I always think about what has actually been valuable for each and every one of you and what are some of these overlapping topics. And it seems to me that in general, most of these topics are around decision making and how to create and live a more fulfilling life, so to speak. And for me, I've always defined fulfilling life as actually being genuinely happy and curious and interested in what you're doing on the day-to-day. There's not too many highs and there's also not too many major lows. And I think that whole process is always going to be just through self-discovery and a lot of trial and error. And for me, I happen to do a lot of that trial and error when I was in college, and that's kind of how I got an early start to figuring out some of the things that work for me, what doesn't work for me, the types of environments I like to be in, types of people I want to be around more. And so all that to say, I'm going to dive into a few of these questions, and as always, I hope these will be helpful for you. So the first question is around my morning routine and if there have been any changes to my morning routine. For me, it's actually stayed quite similar to my morning routine since my senior year of college. So that's like 5 years ago. And I say that because for those of you who are younger and are listening to this podcast while you are in college, that is me emphasizing that it is never too early to start some of these habits. And the more consistent you actually implement this into your life, the more it actually becomes your lifestyle. And it's not really a routine anymore. It's just actually who you are and how you live your life. So for me, it hasn't changed much, but to kind of reiterate how I set up my morning, it's really simple. I wake up somewhere between 6 to 7 a.m. during the week, and that's also often contingent on my workout. So some days I'm working out at Pilates where I actually sign up for a class and I'm financially committed. Other days I might be playing tennis, which is often around 7 a.m. And other days if I'm working out at my gym at home, then usually I give myself some more leeway. So my wake up time just ranges depending on my workout, but yes, usually somewhere between 6 and 6:30. After my workout, which typically ends at the latest around 9 a.m., I will typically just eat breakfast and get ready. And that'll take me about like an hour, maybe an hour and a half if I'm like washing my hair that day. And then somewhere between 10 and 11 onwards is how I just kind of kick off my day. And then throughout the day up until maybe like 7 or 8 p.m. sometimes, that's kind of the end of my own workflow. So morning routine, super simple. And it's not something that I feel like you need to mimic the way someone else does things. Like one of my friends, she has her own architecture and design company, and she's actually the vice president of this big firm. And so she wakes up closer to 5 or 5:30, and she's a very early morning person. And she also has people in her company that are over in Europe. And so for that reason, she already is somewhat, you know, time zone wise, she's behind when she's, you know, if she's going to wake up at 7. And so for her, 5 a.m. works. For me, that's a little bit too early. And so you just kind of find what works best for you. When I worked in my sales job, I woke up at this time, but I also didn't get my workout in as the first thing because I had to be at the office at 8 a.m. So for me, it just was waking up around 6:15, 6:30. I would shower, get ready for the day, and I would leave to head to the office by 7:30. So again, it just really depends on what works best for you. And I would totally advise to lean into that versus what other people online are saying you should or shouldn't do. The next question is around how to keep yourself feeling good while traveling. And this person submitted this question because I am currently in Barcelona as I'm recording this. And over the summer, I was also in south of France. I was in London. And I travel at least a few times throughout the year. And that's something that a lot of you guys notice. And also something I emphasize is maintaining a level of routine even while I'm on the go. And so what for me, what that looks like is simply just maintaining similar habits or activities that I also do at home in New York. So for me here in Barcelona, and I also did this in France, I actually played tennis. And this morning I played tennis here in Barcelona. And just doing these small activities that I frequently do at home, it continues to help me feel good. And I think that's the biggest thing too, is when I travel, I try not to create too much separation from how I live versus how I live while I travel. And I think, again, it always depends on like how long you're going on a trip for. So if you're going somewhere for like 4 or 5 days, you have to give yourself leeway. Maybe you're only getting one workout in. But in this scenario where I'm actually here in Barcelona, and over the summer I was traveling for 2 to 3 weeks at a time, I kept a lot of the habits the same because I'm going for a longer period of time. So in France, I was playing tennis, I think, 3 times during the entire time I was in France, which was for about a week. Here in Barcelona, I've been keeping up with workouts. I am lucky to be a member at Soho House, where they have a gym here. So I've been doing that, where in the morning I'm at the workout, I'm doing sauna, steam, and also, once again, playing tennis. And so if you can find the small activities that you can maintain while you are traveling, that's my best piece of advice, is to keeping yourself feeling good while traveling. And something else that comes to mind too is how you eat. So of course, when we travel, we have a stronger tendency to maybe give ourselves more leeway, and I do that myself. But that being said, I still am quite mindful of how I'm eating. And just again, if I'm going on a longer trip, that also means that my habits and the way I'm living my life are going to stay more similar to the way I typically do it versus a short 4 to 5 day trip. The next question is around day-to-day habits to make sure I am feeling my best. This one for me has been, I think, just like the easiest practice in my lifestyle over the years. As a lot of you guys know, I'm a very active person, and this is actually, funny enough, how I fall asleep very quickly, because I am either skating or playing tennis, or even if I am quote unquote working remotely, I am often like physically leaving my house and going outside and going to either a coffee shop or a co-working space, or maybe I'm meeting with a client that day, or maybe I'm on the ice depending on the season. If I'm like coaching, maybe I'm like running to and from the ice rink. And so just all of those combined it helps me kind of feel my best in a way, like that I actually got out of my house, I got some movement in, that kind of thing. I remember living in LA, when you drive everywhere, it felt a lot different, because here in New York and even in any metro city, you are usually going to walk at least, you know, 8,000 to 9,000 steps per day. And on a really good day, even close to 15,000. So just doing that alone helps me physically feel my best, and also mentally, just kind of like the walking aspect, like just being on your feet and not just stationary, whether at your desk or in your car. That makes me feel really good. Besides that, just obvious workouts, you know, so it's always for me a mix between gym, Pilates, tennis, skating. I always talk about mixing up your workout routine, because if you do just the gym or just like the same mundane workout every single week, not only is it really easy to get tired of that actual workout, but also your body is not getting a shock, meaning it's so used to what you're doing from a workout standpoint. And so it's actually really beneficial to mix it up for multiple reasons, because number one, you're going to be more engaged, more excited. And number two, your body will actually have a physical impact on the difference it is making to your body. Other habits that I do, and I wouldn't call these habits, but just they're simple things that I naturally do, and they also really boost my mood, is indulging in productive activities that also give me dopamine. So something I've shared a long time ago, and I still am public about it from time to time, but I actually do not have television in my apartment, and I have not had a TV since moving to New York. So what that does for me is that it limits my interest in indulging in Netflix or any streaming series or just watching TV as a whole. But also then it saves me money, right? Like, I don't have any streaming service account. And I just simply, again, over the 3 to 4 years, I just stopped watching TV. And only if there is like a show that I'm utterly obsessed with, whether it's like Law and Order SVU or very limited shows I'm just a diehard for, I will watch that on my computer. So what does that mean? My productive activities are usually actually productive. And maybe, I don't know, it just depends. Like, sometimes for me, that is playing house music while I am commuting, like on the subway or walking to my appointment, whatever that is. Like, just like the two things combined, listening to music that gets me going and also being on the go, that's one activity that actually gives me dopamine. Watching tennis highlights as a former player, like when I watch actual professional tennis highlights from recent tournaments, I get dopamine from that. And I'm also not just sitting and watching. I'm usually watching it while I'm cooking dinner, or I'm watching it to wind down for the day, right? It's not, and it's usually very short. Like, I'm watching on YouTube and the highlights are usually somewhere between 3 to 10 minutes, right? So that's another activity that I do, and it just definitely gives me a mood boost. Other things that I like to do is it's just like hobbies, TBH, you know, like playing piano is something that I'll do from time to time. And that, once again, helps me feel good because it's something I did in my childhood. It's something that brings me joy, gives me dopamine. And so you just kind of have to find those activities for you. And again, if you're someone that has a habit right now of just constantly watching television or Netflix or a streaming service, slowly backtrack, right? Like, you don't want to try to go from watching Netflix every other day to completely withdrawing, right? That's really difficult. My personal approach would be, okay, let's say Tuesday is a day that I often watch a certain show. What is one thing I can replace that with and keep the other days as, you know, like, okay, I'll watch television those days. But maybe on a Tuesday, I am indulging in something that is more productive for me. And again, over time, if you're choosing something that actually you enjoy, that will naturally make you feel good as well. And so that's just going to be personal preference. And that's why I mentioned a little bit of the different ideas that I do. Like, watching tennis highlights is still a form of watching something. And someone could probably arguably say it's unproductive. But for me, I watch tennis highlights because it inspires me to hit in a certain way. Like I, ever since like late spring 2023, I returned to tennis and I started getting into leagues and competing again. So just watching high level players play inspire my form and kind of helps me get inspired to get back out on the court. And that's like another habit I implement, right? Like just weekly tennis and signing up for leagues or tournaments or things like that, that really get me excited. It's something new, it's something different. And even just observing my friends or like mutual friends that aren't doing any kind of individual activity for themselves, you can see why they lack that excitement or doing something that brings them joy. And that is usually because, number one, the thing that brings you joy is probably just a personal preference. And because of that, especially if you're not used to doing things on your own or trying things on your own, most of the time, people are waiting to do that thing with another person. Side tangent, but I remember I was once in a conversation with this girl over the summer at like a birthday gathering, and she was talking about how she was inspired by my ability to go do certain things on my own. And I asked her, what's the difference for her? Like, what, why would it be different for her? And she just expressed that she's just more timid or shy about doing things that she likes on her own. And she expressed interest, for example, in signing up for a creative writing workshop where they meet weekly. And I said, how can you expect, you know, one of your friends to also be interested in coming with you? If that's your own joy or interest, just go and do it. In fact, I can't imagine like anyone really goes to these types of things with a friend. In most cases, we go to do the hobbies that we like on our own. And that is also another great way to meet more like-minded people, and especially women that may share an interest with you in that realm. And that's, once again, just an easy hack to making new friends. Next question is advice for those looking for a career shift. So this one was a huge overlapping question. I've been getting a lot of questions from podcast listeners on just career and figuring out what you like, what you don't like, what direction to go in. But I always emphasized it is more important that you are going after becoming the person you want to be versus a person that works in XYZ or a person that works at ABC, right? So for me, when if I were in the position, going back, and this really has not changed much when it comes to career and profession, mind you, with this podcast, I always talk about that I believe that we should strive to be working in some sort of field that really is a crossroad between who you are, the relationships you want to have, and genuine fulfillment. And so one of the mistakes I feel like people make when thinking about career is the what instead of the how and the why. And some of that could be around industry. Someone might pick finance because, okay, this is a lucrative career. Or someone might pick law initially because this is a lucrative career, right? I would have loved to have gone to law school and become a lawyer. And it wouldn't have been because of the money, although that is a huge advantage. But for me, I love the field and I am passionate for the law and being able to actually indulge in that from an intellectual standpoint. But I knew long term, knowing my personality as someone that finds it hard to stick with the rules, I just knew long term that going into law would not be the best long term fit, right? But maybe in another lifetime, that would have been for me. So number one, think about the industries that actually interest you. I actually have a girlfriend, she's in college right now, she's 19, and she's a sophomore in college, and something that she does not shut up about is being vegan and animal cruelty. She is vegan and has been vegan for a few years, but vegetarian all her life. And that's something I always nudge her about is, okay, you have a passion for this, you don't want to shut up about this, you want to be involved in organizations, you should really try to find and test different roles that are involved in that industry. And later down the road, this will be able to help you kind of figure out what is your contribution to that industry or that world, right? So that goes with if you're currently already years into your professional career, maybe you're currently in a place where you don't like your industry at all. Then in that case, it's probably best to explore different industries. Maybe that's fashion, maybe that's tech, maybe that's hospitality, maybe that's startup world, maybe that's in media, right? Figure out the industry. And look, even if you jump to one different industry the first try and you don't like it, just know that you can just jump to another one afterwards. Like, everyone acts like this is like a permanent decision. You can always shift out of it if it doesn't work. And the next layer to that, for me, from my perspective, is looking at the roles that actually interest you. And of course, in combination with what you are actually good at. So maybe you want a marketing role, and maybe you're currently in a marketing role, you know you're good at it, you know you like it, but maybe right now you are in fashion. Perhaps all you really need to do is go into marketing at, let's say, a hospitality group or a hotel company, right? Just showing the examples of, hey, maybe it's not changing your role. Maybe that's completely switching to a different industry that would cater more to what you are actually interested in. This actually goes back to college. I transferred universities halfway through college. And the reason why I transferred was because, number one, I didn't like the school, or didn't love, rather, the school that I was originally at. But number two, I realized that I was studying business economics, and while I learned a lot of applicable things today, especially in economics, I wasn't studying or learning things that I actually was interested in. And that became an issue for me. And so I decided, I don't really give a fuck what I'm studying or what my major is. I care that I actually, what I'm paying for school, or in that case, to be candid, what my parents were helping me pay for school, I wanted to make sure it was worth the dollar. So in this scenario, if I'm working at a job, I want to make sure that the thing that I'm actually doing genuinely interests me, because so many of us end up in a role or a field or an industry that we don't really care about. And at that point, we don't know how to get out of it. And if you don't know where to start, you realize, okay, I'm not in an industry that interests me, and I'm not in a role that I'm good at or that I actually like. Okay, so think about the things that you don't stop talking about outside of work. Maybe that's just, I don't know, there's just always so many unique topics. Again, going back to my college friend who's currently in school, who doesn't stop talking about veganism and her passion for it and animal cruelty. That's something to lean into. And again, maybe you don't initially make a career out of it, so to speak, but you are also able to kind of plant the seeds and connect the dots on, okay, maybe the first 2 years I do this and it's
a BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like, even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Involving animal cruelty, right? Speaking of my friend, or maybe, all right, 2 years later, I get to go into this department and this helps animals in this way, right? It's not always going to be the first step, but just realizing that you need to take a first step to kind of see where you need to go and what actually piques your interest. I think that is super important. And one of my good friends, she actually recently went from, I think, like, well, first out of school, she went into I think accounting or she worked at PwC. She listens to this podcast, so hi, shout out to you. But she started working at PwC. I think she was there for like 2 years. And then she ended up working for a digital marketing company, and she did SEO and like account management. And she enjoyed the remote aspect, but long story short, became more or less unfulfilled in what she was doing and where she was at. And then now she works more in office and actually at a startup that just piqued her interest. She was actually the first full-time hire, if I'm not mistaken. And I've asked her recently what she thinks of it, how she likes it. And she said she loves it. Like night and day, it's so different. She is working more, but she actually feels more engaged with what she's doing. And so I think that's something that's important to think about when it comes to career shift, or if you're early on in your career, test as much as possible, engage if that actually piques your interest. And for me, I didn't have to do a lot of trial and error early on, because I think that ended up doing that more so in college. Like I was picking up a camera already by freshman year of college, and I was shooting content like a wannabe travel blogger. And long story short, like what, 7 years later, I actually do that in a partial way. It's not my full-time career, and nor would I want it to be, but it's kind of ironic that I was already interested in being a travel blogger, even though I was 18 or 19 years old, had no money to be a travel blogger, and had no business to even be, I don't know, like poaching myself as a travel blogger. But then again, right, like there was clearly a seed that was planted, and clearly something that I consistently had interest in. And I don't know, I think over the years, I just sat down with myself and really leaned into, again, what I'm good at, what I actually like, and accepting the realities as well of, okay, what does that look like financially? And what matters to me most at this time, as well as 5 years down the line? Those are just other things to think about when it comes to career shift. Next question is how to goal set from a fresh start perspective, especially with fall right here, or it's actually already fall now, and or manifest. So I'll keep this pretty simple. I've always been the type of person to write down goals in a quarterly way. So like every quarter I have my goals, and then I break down the quarter into monthly goals, and then I write down that monthly goal every day and every week. So I'll say I haven't written down my goals every single day, but every week they are written down. And what it has done for me, it's made me work backwards on, okay, what am I going to do today, not this week, but today, to actually inch towards that goal. And so the things that I write down then are action steps, and they inevitably become more or less my to-do list. And from there, it helps me actually pave the path for what I need to do this week and what I need to do today. And with goals, you want to make sure that you can actually measure your progress. This is something my dad always emphasized. This is something my coaches always emphasize. It's something that you can actually track your progress in. So really think about, you know, what that is that you're focused on when it comes to goals, let's say for fall or Q4. What do you want your focus to be on over the next 3 months or over the next 6 weeks, right? Give yourself a timeline and then actual deadline for those goals. Now, sometimes people are stuck on, I don't even know what goals I want to set. Okay, this is where my biggest practice has always been, just brain dumping my personal vision and ideal life on paper. And what I personally do is I write it down as if there are no limits. So literally, I write down some crazy audacious things, such as, all right, I'm going to have a loft in New York City, possibly a one-bedroom apartment in Paris, and then I'm going to spend summers in south of France and Italy. I'm going to have speaking engagements, and I'm going to travel for podcast interviews, and I'm going to be helping these types of women, and these are the types of women who are my friends, and this is how I dress, and this is how I can afford my wardrobe, like my romantic partners, character traits, all of it. The reason why I share that is because I've noticed through conversation with some friends and mutual friends is that not many people actually write down their vision like this. And sometimes we fantasize things. We write down like these manifesting things and we, you know, envision our life to be a fairy tale. But for me, I have often thrown in a very realistic approach by putting in the snippets of like, oh, this is how I afford, you know, blazers from this store. I don't know, right? Like I'm actually realistic with, okay, this is my vision and this is also how I do it. And I include that in my vision. And by doing so, for me personally, it has made it a lot easier to know, okay, what is then a goal that helps me get towards this vision down the line, which, by the way, the vision can evolve and change, and so you accept that as well. But what is a goal that can bring me closer to this vision? Okay, so if I want to have a home in New York and it's going to cost this, right, what can I do in my own life to set myself up to be able to afford that? And remember, the other option is that, you know what, maybe I look at this vision and I'm like, fuck, this is too hard, and so I'm not going to go after this dream, right? And you can, you know, I always said this, I can always move back to the middle of Pennsylvania where the cost of living is so cheap and I can just have a home there and be happy. Like, everyone's got their own preferences. And so, yeah, that's just my little rant on goal setting and starting from a fresh place and really being aware of the general idea of what you want for yourself in life. You know, we never are going to know specifically what in every aspect, but in a lot of cases, if we wrote down what we envision our ideal life to be without hesitation, with no limits, we're actually able to write that down and we're actually able to be like, oh, you know what? Okay, it's actually not as far off as I think it is in my own head. Last two questions for episode 300. The top three things that have helped me in my career and my professional success. This one is pretty easy and straightforward, like I said. Number one, following up. I learned this in my corporate sales job. The way they trained us was magnificent. I mean, nothing scared me after this job. The amount of times I heard people say fuck off or fuck you or shut the fuck up or no was endless, to be really honest with you guys. And I did outside sales, meaning I actually went business to business physically in my 3-inch pumps with my tote bag in a blazer sweating in Laguna Beach, and I would go door to door. And so something I learned through working in sales is the importance of following up, and that we have to follow up minimum of 5 to 7 times before we may hear back from them. 5 to 7 times. You might think it's like nuts to follow up 3 times. No, we were required to follow up 5 to 7 times. And there's a lot of truth in this. And I've even done 9 times before. And these are times where, of course, you don't want to look crazy and you have to use your emotional intelligence to know when it's time to move on. But I have applied this in my own marketing agency, even in my podcast when I wanted to get certain guests on. I followed up very diligently. And this is even in my influencer creator work, right? When I stay in hotels or I get restaurant collaborations, the reason why I've gotten them, and many of them I can point to as examples, I only got them because I followed up. And here's my secret. I usually follow up typically 2 to 3 days after the first email is sent. If they didn't respond, I follow up about 2 to 3 days later. And I use that as a guiding tool. I usually give them about 48 hours to respond to me, and I keep following up. And here's the thing. I'm happy to receive a no if that's going to be the answer. I would just rather hear from them a solid no rather than no response and always wondering. So don't be upset if you're, or rather, don't be shy about following up. And I'll leave one last thing on the following up aspect. I remember I interned at a digital marketing agency my senior year of college, and I found this remote internship. I thought it was perfect. It was perfect. I had an initial interview. It was great. And then they said they would follow up, and I really felt like I was going to get this role. And I didn't hear from them for maybe a couple of days. So I followed up with the hiring manager, and this was a small company of like 5 women. And I followed up and I said, you know, the things I need to say. And I just said, checking in, you know, would love to make sure like everything you need from me. And later on, I got hired. But a note that I saw on my manager's screen when we were having a meeting and she had a shared screen, I saw a little sticky note that was on her actual desktop. It literally said like positive, like something about like positive signs about Emily. She followed up on the role. I read that. Obviously, she just probably forgot that I could see that, but this was on her like little digital sticky note. And so that goes to show that people notice, whether you realize it or not, people notice if you follow up, and you follow up in a way that makes it just hard to say no to you. And that kind of ties into my second piece on what has helped me in my career is my level of assertiveness and not hesitating to go after the thing or the client or whatever that I want. And I've noticed a lot of people, when it comes to career, especially us women, we have a tendency to kind of not be sure whether, you know, there is it too much if I speak up or whatever. Again, there are times where sometimes you are too assertive and you're coming off too strong. And that's where trial and error will come into play. Practice and experience will help. But for me, it's night and day. If I know there's a client that is genuinely interested, or in this case, like a prospective client, if they're interested, I'm very forward with them and I will follow up even 6 months later. I will keep in touch and I will not hesitate to make the first move. This also has been the case sometimes in my past experiences and in other parts of life too. If it's like even making a new girlfriend, like if I see someone I like at a workout or, I don't know, at a tennis clinic, I would just go up to them and introduce myself. And that's just a practice you really have to implement into your life. And then the last thing that has helped me in my career, I alluded to it earlier, but taking strong consideration of what I'm naturally good at and what I actually like, and then investing more time and years into this. So I got lucky and I picked up a DSLR camera when I was 19 years old, and I was living in beautiful Southern California where I started to take pictures. At the time, I had no idea how to use Adobe Lightroom, which is how I edit my photos now. But I was like, what's exposure? What is highlights? What are shadows? Like, I had no idea any of this. And I remember I was just playing around. I didn't even know presets were a thing. All that to say, it's been years. It took me years to figure it out. And that's the only reason why, you know, being a content creator is a part-time job of mine. And so, number one, this is something I was always interested in. It's something that I naturally was good at from the get-go, but then became better at, right? And then I just kept investing time into this. That's why it's part of my career now. But I would say this is across the board. Even if you were really good, or you happen to be in a career now where you like it and you know you're pretty damn good at it, keep at it, right? And make it known that this is like your domain. And this is something I said to a podcast listener in Instagram DMs. I said something around how, you know, yes, certain industries pay less, right? But just like anything in life, if you are really exceptional at what you do and you are hard to replace, no matter what industry, it is going to be hard not to pay the price for having you on their team. So keep that in mind, even if you feel discouraged in fashion, right? The fashion industry is sometimes low paying, but if you're really exceptional and you know you can show up in a way where it's like, fuck, why, if you know what I mean? Like if you want to come in and ask for a certain salary and it's way above what they usually pay, but you know you're in a position where it's hard to deny you, that's when it's going to be, you know, in your favor. And that's something you have to take into consideration, is that often only happens when you're really good at what you do. Last but not least, also somewhat related towards career, but more so, I think, just around knowing which way to lean when it comes to making the right decisions and figuring out how to work towards making something happen. So I'll actually use the situation that this person shared with me. And this was, so she's actually a recent college grad, and she's now a few months into her consulting job, and she's in her own apartment and all of that, right? It's just what we do when we first graduate from college. And she's now realized that, okay, she's getting her consulting experience, but it's not something she sees herself doing long term. Okay, that's a great sign, right? Now you have that data point, you know that this is not what you want long term. She also knows that she wants to very much eventually relocate to New York. And she said, like, hypothetically, if she were to get an offer in months, she would take it. She also feels stuck because she's signed to her apartment lease for a year until next summer. And she was also advised that she should ideally stay in the job for at least a year. And so she's kind of tossed between rational decision making versus kind of following her inner compass and so forth. And like all things, I think in a lot of cases, you need to combine both. And I'll use this in my own personal life. Many years ago, I, on a whim, decided to move from Orange County, California to Los Angeles, which is about 45 minutes north. And I moved to Venice, California. And at the time, for me, it was just like an inner compass. I realized that Orange County was no longer serving me. I was there for like 5.5 years, and it was time to try something new, despite the fact that it was the middle of pandemic. And well, I was going to move into a nicer apartment where rent was more expensive. So this became a toss-up between logic and gut instinct for me as well. So for me, I figured, okay, if I can financially afford the apartment and the move, then that part is solidified. So in this podcast listener, in her scenario, I said the same thing. If you were to hypothetically get an offer to New York and you can find a way to sublease your apartment, which seems to be the main rational obstacle, right? Then I would say in that part, that solution is now solved, right? And that's where you would just lean into your gut instinct. And, you know, usually it's because, you know, there's a genuine interest, there's an intrigue in that direction. And some of the questions I would advise, though, when it comes to kind of checking your inner compass, per se, right? Ask yourself why. Why do you want to do this? Why do you want to make this change? Why do you want to go in this direction? So for me, it's like, why do you want to move to LA? Well, LA is not a crazy change from Orange County. It's Southern California. It's busier. There's more things to do. There's more, a bigger network for me to work with. And so then I knew my why. The benefits of doing so was to, you know, help me expand, help me grow, help me experience a different part of Southern California. And then at the same time, I did a worst case scenario. I was like, okay, worst case scenario, I don't like LA. Well, simple. I can just find a way to sublease my apartment and go back to Orange County where I once lived, right? Like, that's the thing too, is we always think we're making an extreme decision, but we got to keep in mind that we really can just always go back to the thing that we, you know, we feel is actually better fit for us, right? So maybe this listener, maybe going back to where she's at right now, I think in Minnesota, maybe she moves to New York, she doesn't like it, right? And she finds it surprising, like, oh, okay, I thought I would like it, but I don't. She can always move back to Minnesota, and she can always go back and find another consulting job. And that's what I realized for myself too, both, you know, moving from OC to LA and then even moving from LA to New York. If I did not like New York, then I always knew I could come back to LA. And in fact, I actually know a lot of people that did do this for LA or New York. They either moved to LA from New York, then they moved back to New York shortly after, or vice versa. They moved to New York from LA, realized they didn't like it, and came right back to LA. So, you know, it is what it is. And of course, the rational or the logic side of it is that there's going to be a financial cost and a financial burden. If you can just bite the bullet on that and just accept that that will come with the territory, then, you know, I think oftentimes I just go for it, especially if I know that this is the direction I want to be going towards. And I remember my friend, my middle school best friend, who I love her. She helped me through so many self-confidence aspects in my early 20s or so. And I remember a long time ago, I was considering moving to DC, like Washington, DC from Orange County. This was the time I was considering law school and all of this. And I told her like, oh, but like, what if I don't like it compared to OC? Which I'm glad I never moved to DC. Like it wouldn't have been my vibe. But she said the same exact thing. We were like 22 or 23. And she told me, Emily, literally, what's the worst case scenario? I mean, you can always go back to Orange County. It's not like the people aren't still there. It's not like things change. Like you go back and you just kick off your life where you left it. And what's the cost, right? The cost of, you know, your car, like moving your car back and forth cross country. I mean, just bite the bullet, right? Like, or just save up for that cost just in case it happens. And so I realized, like, you know, that's usually what it is. Sometimes it's a financial burden and situation. And I understand that not all of us have the ability or flexibility. And I certainly didn't when I was younger. And I can't say that I still have insane flexibility in that sense. But I think oftentimes you need to balance both, because if we're too logical and rational, then we kind of almost like outsmart ourselves. But then also if we are leaning into our intuition or gut instinct too much, sometimes we can make too rash or like too quick of a decision without really weighing out the important aspects. And that was something my dad did really well for me, is when it came to back in the day moving to LA, he wasn't a fan of Los Angeles. It's just not, you know, his type of place, although he came to like it once he saw my apartment. But he said the same thing. You know what? If you can afford your rent and it's not going to affect your job and affect your, you know, direction, you know, I don't see why not. All right. So that was all for today's Q&A episode in honor of episode 300. I hope these questions and answers were helpful. And as always, if you enjoyed this episode or you had a takeaway from it, please be sure to DM me on Instagram and let me know. You can find me at Emily E. Duong or at What Fulfills You. I will answer on either or. And as always too, if you have some other feedback or just topics that you would love for me to dive into more, I love taking that into consideration. So again, don't be a stranger. And you can find all of the fun merch, including the card game, the hoodie, the hats, which are almost all sold out in certain colors. You can find that online at whatfulfillsyou.com. Everything is linked in the show notes, including an exclusive code. Thanks again for tuning in today. I will chat with you all in the next one.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
And I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.